There is a quote that says, "For every lock out there, there is someone who is trying to pick it." Nowhere is this more true than in the current very digital, very connected world. Cybercrime today is a reality that affects all of us far more than we could ever imagine. This is the Healthy Business Show. I'm your host, Fred Rode, and in this episode, we've got Charles Uckermann in studio. Charles is the Chief Executive Officer at AVS Cybersecurity, and I've invited him onto the show to talk about how real this threat is, what it looks like, and what we entrepreneurs can do to avoid it. Welcome, Charles. I'm very excited to have you on the Healthy Business Show. I'm very interested to find out about this industry that you find yourself in, the cybersecurity industry. And as an outsider and as an entrepreneur, very fascinated by people's entrepreneurial journeys, I actually just want to delve into your particular journey. We have these kind of visions of cybersecurity as these kind of, you know, dark, faceless buildings with long corridors and rooms that look like Mordor and, you know, people who never see the light and who just sit hacking away at keyboards. Can you give us a little bit of insight into why you got into this particular sector and what the drive was for you to really enter into it?
All right. I think one thing about IT and cybersecurity, for that matter, it is probably one of the fastest changing landscapes that you could find. Things are changing literally on a daily basis. To sort of get right at the stats of it, currently there's about 4.5 new viruses or pieces of malware every second launched per day, which means that it is changing so fast, and to try and to keep up with it is an enormous challenge. But I mean, that's what makes it very interesting. So if you don't like learning, if you don't like to be creative, don't be in this industry. This is an industry that you have to adopt every single day. You have to learn every single day. Now, my journey started off actually as an industrial engineer. So I started designing production lines at Nissan when I was a youngster.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I found my way into this industry about 9 years ago. The company itself, AVS Cybersecurity, belonged to an Irish owner. And about 8 years ago, we borrowed some money and we did a management buyout. And
okay,
we changed
so it was
our strategy.
It was an existing entity that you took over. Okay.
Correct. Yeah, gotcha. It's about in existence for about 20 years now.
Okay.
And then we started to change our whole journey from a consulting and an architectural business. So yes, I just loved the energy in it and the fast change in it and the new things that are coming out every day. And I think why I have a passion for it as well, you know, it is, I think, a bit of that nature in terms of making the world a better place, protecting people a bit better. People are quite ignorant in terms of what cyber risk is because you can't see it. People find it difficult to conceptualize the associated risk. Think about it. I mean, you just work on your computer.
Yeah.
I mean, what happens behind it? I mean, you don't know. Techie guys often try and overcomplicate it as well, you know.
Yeah.
and it's actually not that complicated.
Well, it's kind of good for business, right? To overcomplicate it so that us plebs don't actually understand what the hell's going on.
Well, I think lawyers do it as well with the language they use, and doctors do it as well with the language they use. So I think it's probably relevant to every industry,
yeah.
You know, specialty industries, that they use their own jargons, and that sort of makes it sound complicated. But for the average user, it actually doesn't matter. As long as the screen is what you can see on your screen is true, and you can actually type on your keyboard what's happening, I think in reality, that's really the end result that people are looking at. How it gets there doesn't matter. So it's, but it's a changing world.
And I think the perception of cybersecurity and cyber threats has changed quite radically in the recent past. From being certainly a little bit ambivalent about it, we didn't really care too much about it in the past. We just paid for maybe a little bit of a software program that was preventative, and you just sort of thought you had to have it installed. Now, I think it's become a lot more top of mind. There's been a lot of very high-profile security breaches. Recently, the hacks of Liberty and Standard Bank, for example, and that's scary stuff, right? It's now become top of mind and it's become more real. Would that be accurate?
Yeah. I think the challenge is if you look at physical crime, versus cyber crime, When you see someone out in the field, you can protect yourself in a way of putting up burglar bars and putting up electric fences and alarm systems and all these kind of things. But imagine this. If someone wants to communicate to me or wants to enter my network from the UK or from Belarus or from Australia, they don't need a visa. If I want to go and visit Australia, I need a visa. I need a passport. I need to identify myself. And with cyber, the world is one big world. It is not protected in the same mechanism as you have in the physical world. Hence, it's made it a very, very small village. So it's literally with the press of a button, and I can communicate with a server sitting on the other side of the world. And also with cloud. So a lot of applications like something like Office 365, and so on, and Facebook and Google and you name it.
Sure.
Those are applications that are now sitting in the cloud, which means it become even more simpler to access that information. So think of the old days when you still had mainframes. Yeah. If you wanted access to that mainframe or that computer system, you actually first had to be physically inside the building.
Sure.
Now with a connected world that we live in and with this whole cloud world and massive data and hybrid cloud and things like that, the accessibility to that data is so simple if you don't put the right checks and balances and gates and identity and access management in place to access the data. And I think that's the core in terms of why it's become more aware, because people are moving more into the cloud and more people are ignorant about it and they are more hacked in the process. They go onto a public Wi-Fi sitting at any coffee shop or sitting at the airport and not realizing what they are exposing themselves when they go onto like public Wi-Fis and not having proper protection mechanisms on their computers.
Can we talk into that a little bit? I mean, let's just say there's a couple of examples there that I want to delve into, because I want to try and get to the threat of running a business and actually making it real, particularly for our audience. If we look at a 10-person SME that's operating out of a collaborative space in Sandton, right? And he's or she's not necessarily that versed in cybersecurity and so on. What does that threat look like? Can you make it a bit more real in terms of actual practical examples of what could happen if that company is not adequately secured?
I'd probably want to give you a couple of pointers that a typical 10-man business can do.
Sure.
And one is that they get a proper antivirus product. Don't download the free versions. Often cyber criminals designed free antivirus. And you would then download it and think you've got antivirus, but meantime it was developed by cyber criminals.
Okay.
And they can then get access to your information. So go and buy a reputable piece of software. And I mean, with Discovery Business Insurance, they offer you best of breed antivirus as part of their insurance packages.
Sure.
So I think that's the first thing, is get a proper antivirus in place. The second thing is, you know, often frustrated with the amount of bandwidth that all these updates and patches on the software that we're using. Do those, because what happens is the manufacturers of that software, they identify certain weaknesses, or we call it vulnerabilities, within the software, and then they give you a patch or they give you a piece of code in order to harden that piece of software so that you're not exposed, because it's now known in the open that that's been a vulnerability, which means download those updates, make sure you do those patch management, because it'll actually protect you better. It's like repairing your fence. Suddenly there's a hole on the one side of the yard. You've identified it. Now go and close it. That's what patch management is all about.
Okay.
So I think that's the one thing. The third thing is make sure you have backups of your critical data. Any organization runs off data. Whether it's small data, big data, doesn't matter. The whole livelihood of the organization is based on their customers and their invoicing and their recipes they're using and their logistics, et cetera, et cetera. So that's critical data. If that data has been compromised, and you don't have access to the data, let's say the server on which it was running has now suddenly fallen over, or you had it in the cloud and your data has been compromised because you didn't have proper access control into that data, what's going to happen to you? So make backups and make sure that your backups are available.
And what does a backup look like? Because, I mean, traditionally you would have a backup on a server, right? Or you'd have it on some kind of external hard drive or whatnot. Nowadays, you've got the facilities like Dropbox and all the various cloud-based options that are now available to us. How would you run those backups? Because I would see them as being cloud-based backups. I mean, that's certainly the case for my business.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a synchronization that you can do. So you simply just like iCloud and,
yes,
and Dropbox, et cetera, you simply synchronize the data that sits in your laptop. And if something does happen to your laptop, you have all of that data available either in your Dropbox or your OneDrive,
sure,
in the Microsoft space or so. So I think that for the average PC, that's the simplest way to do
is
it.
Is that enough though? Because you mentioned if it's on the cloud, it can also be compromised.
Well, it's only as strong as the weakest link, which is your username and password.
Sure.
So people often use very simple passwords. They use their birth date. They use password 123. I can give you a list of the typical passwords being used, and people are ignorant, use complicated passwords.
I want to jump in there just in terms of password management. I think most of us use passwords that we can remember, right? But you're saying use more complex passwords. Is that really a threat? And maybe talk into that a bit. I mean, because I'm starting to feel a bit vulnerable now speaking to you, you know?
Yeah. So think about it. Do you have one key that will open all the doors in your house? You've got multiple keys opening different doors for different risk profiles.
Yeah.
Your safe will have certainly got a different key. Your car certainly has got a different key. So I think take that same simple approach in terms of having passwords. Now, when you do passwords, don't overcomplicate it. Relate it back to the application. Let's say, for instance, it is a Dropbox. Let's take your birth date. Take your birth date, call it at, and call it drop in. So it's the Dropbox, which means you're using both your brain left and right hand side. Don't try and remember everything. Use a bit of the creativity juice in terms of helping you to associate your passwords that you're using for different kinds of applications. Or create a little sentence. My mother is turning 80, M-I-E-T-80 So think about something that is
very cool,
is simpler to remember. So create almost like a bit of a mind map in terms of how you should remember your passwords. That's one way of doing it.
Sure.
And then you also do have certain applications.
Sure, like one password, that
one
sort of
password
thing.
One password and things like that. Kaspersky also has one. So it's called a vault. And in that vault, you create a really heavy password, and that's the only one that you have to remember.
Gotcha.
And then everything from there sits inside your vault, which means that you've got very complicated passwords which cannot be compromised.
Yeah.
But and which means that you are now better protected.
More secure.
Yeah,
what
more
I like,
secure.
I mean, I use one password. I mean, it's kind of, you mentioned a house. I mean, this is, for me, it's like a house with 1,000 doors because I got so many bloomin' applications that I'm using. And as we all are, and there's more and more every day, right? And particularly as a small business and everything is moving more mobile and, you know, you've got all these intertwined, interconnected software applications from Squarespace to MailChimp to Dropbox to G Suite to, you know, all of these things are all kind of integrating with each other. And you want a simple way of opening all those doors, right?
Well, think about it. Let's say you've got a very simple password on something like Facebook. How many times do you log into applications by using your Facebook as your authentication mechanism?
Mm.
Which means that if your Facebook password has been compromised, you've compromised the identity to all those other applications
for
as well.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, use a bit more, be a bit more creative. It's not password 123.
And Charles, you mentioned a little bit earlier about sitting in a Wi-Fi zone at the airport, for example. You often get that little pop-up on your screen saying, you know, you're in a compromised zone. Can you talk into that? What is the threat there? Is there really some person in a hoodie sitting in the corner who's going to hack into your computer? What does that threat actually look like?
Well, it might not be a hoodie. It could be a girl at one of the coffee shops at the coffee shop sitting or at the airport.
Sophisticated Vogue model.
Don't be deceived by the looks. So, no, certainly it's not hoodies guys in dark dungeons that are doing it.
Or a guy in Uzbekistan.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are guys that are out there to prowl, and they're only after one thing. They're there to steal money. So if they can get access to your credit card details, if they can get access to your identity in terms of who you are, your
ID
number.
Is it proximity-based? I mean, are they just to explain that?
So if you're sitting at an airport.
Uninitiated, yeah.
And you go onto a public Wi-Fi, and your computer is not properly protected in terms of when you're on that public Wi-Fi, I can literally sit in that same public Wi-Fi environment and I'll be able to hack into all the data on your computer. It's literally, the software you don't have to go and develop, you literally get it off the web. I can go and get that software. I can buy what they call a pineapple. A little pineapple
that's
is a little
pineapple.
Pineapple. It's a little device, and it will scan everyone that's on that network. And we use it when we do vulnerability assessments in environments. I mean, I can scan your environment. Yeah, I see you had a guest Wi-Fi password, and I can just quickly log in there because it's. I'm not sure whether you switch that Wi-Fi radio off at night. But for instance,
yeah.
if your printer has got a Wi-Fi, I can actually see what you've printed purely because your printer Wi-Fi was open and it wasn't locked. So in an airport environment, it's literally, there's a little piece of device that you buy and you can literally go and see everyone's data on the computers if they did not lock down what we call the firewall. On the computer itself, because your computer also has got a firewall.
Yes.
And that locks down what kind of traffic, what kind of information do you allow onto your computer and what kind of information can go out of your computer. So it's literally a gate.
Yeah.
Electronic gate. So if those things are just like wide open as God's grace, believe it, it's going to be very, very easy to get your credit card details, because once you've got your credit card details or your banking login information, we're in the money.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're after. And I can even go and buy credit card details today, which will be guaranteed valid for the next 3 days with the CSV numbers.
Jeepers.
So it's available.
Charles, you're officially the most dangerous guy in the building right now. Can I ask you a question?
I hope I'm actually the good guy.
You look so sweet and friendly, but actually you're this dark terrorist. But Charles, can I ask you a question then? On that note, I mean, does Kaspersky and AVS, do you guys have hackers amongst you to test your own systems? Do you employ the smartly dressed girl in the coffee shop to come and try and hack into your own systems to test out your security?
Brilliant question. So there's two types of hackers. You get what we call the dark hat or the black hat hackers.
Yeah.
Those are the bad guys.
Okay.
And they are trying there just for financial gain and so on. And then you get white hat hackers. And we've got those white hat hackers, yes.
They're like the good, bad people.
They're the good, bad people. So they are helping you to identify what you cannot see. You say, here's my website, or here's my what we call an IP address, your, like your postbox address for your emails. See if you can compromise it. See if you can get in here without me even picking it up. And then we will use all sorts of interesting tools to actually do it. We also use things like social engineering. So to give you an example, we did a vulnerability assessment on a very big mine the other day. And it was based on a black basis, so they didn't give us a lot of information. They said, guys, there's the mine. We're not giving you IP addresses. We're not giving you URLs. Try and get access into our system. So what did we do? We went onto the internet. We looked at their website. We then looked at who was the head of HR. We phoned up. I say, good day. We're phoning from the IT department. We're doing some updates on the IT side. We're going to drop you a mail. Can you please just quickly click on that so we can finish our updates that we need to run because of the new hardening of our security? She clicked on it. The moment she clicked on it, we had access into the system.
Jeepers.
So we will take about a half an hour. In most organizations, I would say 99% of the organizations, we'll take half an hour and we will have between 20 and 30% of the people's passwords because people are really vulnerable. So how does it happen? It will, you're the IT manager in an organization and we will simulate an email that it looks it comes from you, sent to the whole organization. People don't look at the details. They didn't see that it came from a Gmail account, but it was your signature because we copied and pasted the signature because it's really available.
Sure.
We used your branding because that's available on your on the internet, on your website. So we simulate it. We use a social engineering technique where we then simulate it as if it was you and we got access to, into your system. It's as simple as that. It's not complicated. Hence why do the basic things right. If you do the basic things right, I think, you know what, you are probably 75% there.
All these examples of hackers and so on. This appears to be, in most cases, and certainly from a layman's perspective, a human element, right? The hacker would need to phone in, find a weak link. It's not like you could just go and hack into the Pentagon and, you know, get the codes.
Not at all.
And start pressing red buttons.
Not at all. No, there's a very, very specific approach that you do. So it's a targeted attack if you want to attack someone. So you work your strategy out in terms of how you're going to get into the system. I mean, what we did with that social engineering, the first part of our attack was to make a phone call. And we then ask someone to do something, and then we load a code. So the moment they press on the link, but that's only the starting point by loading the code.
Yes.
Then there's a exploitation phase where we're now exploiting it, and then we start extracting. And once you're done, you then take all your tracks away as well. So you've got software that removes all the logs to show that you actually had access to the system as well. So which means that there's no footprints that you leave behind, that you've actually been there. We often find what they call zero-day attacks. It's vulnerabilities that are within software that has been there for years, or persistent threats. It could have been available in that environment for years without us knowing it. So again, it could happen right here, right now. We don't know about it, but you know what? To worry about that, I think it's probably not worth it. At least do some of the basic things right to protect you in a reasonable way.
So it's not hard, is what you're saying. It's fairly easy for an entrepreneur or small business owner to protect his or her business by just deploying these steps,
yes,
right? So ensuring that you have at least a basic paid for reputable antivirus software system and a little bit of awareness around threats like phishing and duplication of emails and that sort of thing.
That is as important, because you deal with people. And technically speaking, your people are your vulnerabilities, because they are the people that obviously deal with the computers and so on. So I think to create that awareness is absolutely fundamental. I'll give you an example. If you go and work at a mine or in a factory, you will not work in that environment if you didn't go through health and safety induction, right?
Mm.
That risk is just too high for that organization. Yet we allow people on our networks without going through IT security induction. So we are allowing people into our network totally being exposed, and we didn't do anything to actually help them to understand what is their responsibility to make sure that the environment is protected. So, yeah, if you get that mail that you've won the lotto for the fourth time in the UK, you didn't.
I click on all of those.
Exactly. You know, so you know, it's just creating that awareness and ask yourself the common sense question.
Sure.
Does it make sense? Does this make sense? I think that's just to create that awareness, because adults don't learn.
Yeah.
And once you made them aware of it, it almost becomes a way of doing things within that little organization.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to your other point, in that it's the unseen threat. It's not the thing that you can see. I mean, these are not real doors. These are
virtual doors.
Ones and zeros that you're looking at and that you're dealing with. And so, you know, whilst I suppose the threats are, in fact, you know, a lady in a Santon coffee shop or a shadowy dude in Uzbekistan, there's, you know, these are real people, but they can't be seen. So those threats, like the mining threat of, you know, the health and safety, which is very prevalent, and you can see the real impact of it, it's difficult to define it in your mind as what it could be.
Well, imagine going to the police station and you want to open a case against a cyber criminal that sits in Belarus.
Mm.
So first of all, you would say, well, my data was stolen. So you still got your data? Yes, I do. But it's stolen. Yes, it's been stolen as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just start there.
Yeah.
It is incredibly difficult from a prosecution perspective to actually get a cyber criminal in jail.
Yeah.
Because you can sit anywhere in the world. It could look as if I sat in Australia, but following up, I was actually in China. No, I wasn't. Oh, I was actually in the UK. So it's very elusive because of the way how the whole global internet is knitted together. It's quite difficult to sort of like pinpoint who you are, where you are, and to actually then prosecute you, to actually have – it's only the high-level cases which are prosecuted.
Sure.
But the average stuff is not.
I think we should get Leon Schuster to do that scene, by the way, the police station interview. But I think just in terms of – again, I'm trying to define it particularly for our listeners – what's the worst that can happen? And maybe are there any horror stories that you've come across?
Yes, I think the worst case that you can have is that you want to work on your computer. Suddenly you see certain credit card transactions going off your bank, or your data is not there anymore, or your data has been ransomized in some form of way. Except for the financial impact, there's a huge emotional impact, whether an enterprise organization or a small organization. Think about if you're a slightly larger organization, your reputational damage. We're talking millions of rand. I think the average now for a compromise in an organization, enterprise, we're talking around about the value is about 16 million per incident.
Sure.
For a small business, the average value is about 1 million rand per incident to recover your data. And that's to make sure your reputation is intact again, et cetera. All the processes that goes around it. So it's a very costly emotionally and financially exercise if you've been compromised. So do reasonable things to try and prevent that in the first place.
So we've spoken about having the right virus protection software. We've spoken about awareness. Are there any other things that you can speak into?
And we also mentioned the patch management.
Yes.
And I think it's also you want to be more proactive, and you would maybe want to look at a service provider of some sort that will create a bit of prediction around it, because that's where the big data comes in. So monitoring all the antivirus activities that are happening in your environment, monitoring all the kinds of data that's been traveling through your firewall or whatever, and then saying, guys, we are picking up certain profiles that you potentially could be exposed or are going to be exposed. And I think that's where you want to proactively monitor your environment to make sure that you're more in a predictive scenario than you are just in a reactive scenario. That's where the world is going, because I mentioned to you 4.5, 5 viruses per second.
Sure.
To protect all of those all the time is becoming quite a difficult job. So you want to look at the behavior. It's also like the behavior analysis. And this is where machine learning, artificial intelligence is a bit of a vague concept. I'm not quite sure if it exists. I think machine learning exists. Machines don't make decisions themselves. They make decisions on data that they've been fed, and that's machine learning. So to ask the questions, to sort of say, I want to make new decisions, you have to feed the machine with new data. The machine cannot creatively come up with that new data. It will only operate on the data that's been fed. I think the machine learning component is that it helps to ask certain questions in terms of products and services that clients don't even know that they want. So it helps us to come up with certain business models and prediction models. Give you an example. You go onto Google and you searched, I wanted to travel to Italy. And suddenly you get a whole lot of adverts coming up while the next time you open Google again. So what did they do? They picked up your search pattern.
Sure.
And they then created a whole service delivery around your behavior.
Sure.
The machine didn't know that you want to go to Italy. You fed it with data to say that you were searching for something to be Italy. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, the retargeting, right?
The retargeting and so on. But that's all about machine learning, and it's building up algorithms. From an AI point of view, I think that's a very, very dangerous situation. I think when we really go into that, where machines start creating their own intelligence, which I'm saying they, I don't think they
can. I'd love to do a full podcast on just that.
Yeah, that's a discussion all on its own.
Yes, of course.
And we should, I think, as smaller organizations, need to have a look at what kind of applications and what kind of service providers can we use that can give us the intelligence of machine learning. So when I spoke just now about the antivirus, a good antivirus has got machine learning built into it. So it builds up the algorithms of the kind of virus that it's picking up and on which Wi-Fi set you are, etc., to try and make sure that in the back end they put additional definition files onto your computer to make sure that you will not be exposed, because they are picking that up everywhere in the world because of the honeypots and everything and so on. So that's machine learning.
Sure.
It's not AI. It's
just quickly, you mentioned honeypots. For our audience, can you define what a honeypot is?
Yes.
I think it's quite an important term.
Yes. So a honeypot is someone that says, here I am, give me all your data. I'm like a stupid user, if I can call it that. And I'm onto an open internet, and I'm exposing my credit card details. So it simulates that I'm a very poor user of my computers. So the cyber criminals may think, oh, here's a good attacker. Let's attack this guy. Meantime, I'm just actually extracting all the data that I'm now getting from the dark web and from the attackers to try and analyze how the thinking pattern works so that I can build that back into my software in order to protect you.
Gotcha.
So using bad guys' info to actually build stronger applications.
Sure. And I think in that last sentence, there's another lesson. Just don't ever go into the dark web. That's probably not a good idea.
No.
I think that's just a hive of malware and Trojans and misactivity that you don't want to go into. Charles, just to close off, I want to know if you've got any final thoughts or final pieces of advice for the entrepreneurs in our audience and for people growing their businesses?
Yes, I think don't try and do everything yourself. Don't be intimidated by all the technocrats around you. Often, as I say, technical IT guys want to over-bombard you and over-complicate you. Think simple. Think, what is it that your business requires? Use technology to enable your business. There's lots of very good applications out in the market, either on your phone or your computers, that can enable you to be mobilized much faster in this digital world that we're living. So don't try and redesign it yourself. Just go and search what are the kind of applications that fits your business model, and then adopt those. Make sure they are properly secured and hardened, and I think you'll be then be still relevant and competitive in the next year or two, which means you won't be caught out with disruptors in your industry. So I think the applications are there. Go and find them and make sure that you don't listen to everyone that's telling you everything. Follow your gut. Follow your common sense. That doesn't make sense what they are trying to give you. Vendors and technical people want to sell you the world and it can make tea and coffee and silver bullet and everything in one. Don't believe all of that. Think for yourself.
So keep it simple and keep it repeatable, I guess.
Keep it real. Just keep it real.
And again, just going back to your original point, Discovery Business Insurance actually does provide you with those repeatable applications and advice, I suppose, in how to protect yourself.
And the backups and the proactive monitoring of your environment and the incident response. So if you have an incident and you've been compromised, as part of the Discovery Policy Insurance, we will actually go out and actually go and assist the client to recover the data again and get them up and running in the shortest space of time. So you've got absolutely a disruptor in terms of what Discovery has done in terms of the IT space. So if you take the policy, you can actually get all of that almost for free.
Amazing. This has been such a fascinating discussion, Charles. I really appreciate it. And to be frank, I could speak to you for another hour or so just on some of the more fascinating, darker sides of security and also some of the individuals, I guess, that are within the sector. Congratulations on your success and thank you for all the advice that you've given us and all the best for the future.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Healthy Business Show. If you love this podcast, do let us know via social media. Tag @discovery_SA. Use the hashtag #DSYHealthyBusiness and please do rate us on your favorite podcast platform. Whether it's Apple, Spotify, or wherever you find your shows. You can also find more episodes on the Discovery website at discovery.co.za/corporate/podcasts.